Music City, Nashville, Tennessee, Laramie Guitars presents two verses in a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino
and the Music Row Show.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're glad you're tuning in.
Oh, yeah. We're having a blast at the 5th Annual Mississippi Songwriters Festival. Right? Did you notice I said Mississippi?
Yes, you did.
Mississippi.
You're practically
Mississippi.
A local.
Practically. You don't say Mississippi. They beat you up around here.
Yeah, that's true.
But we're here having a blast at the 5th Annual Mississippi Songwriter Festival right here in Ocean Springs, Mississippi.
Very good. Very good. Now, in case you haven't heard, everybody, we are now on Dish. Right. So anybody with Dish can watch us on TV now because Blue Highways. Let's see how I said Blue Highways.
That doesn't work.
Okay, Blue Highways TV is now on Dish.
You can watch us four times a week. So Dish then?
Dish.
Okay, Dish.
Well, actually, the people in the know say Dish.
You can watch us four times a week on Channel 73 all over the United States. And for the first time ever, you know, we've been on TV for 3 years, but never in Middle Tennessee. So
that is true.
Finally in Nashville, people can watch us. So, Hino, tell our listeners about this wild man sitting with us right now.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we're welcoming back to the show one of our favorite guys in Nashville. So much fun to be around. Hit songwriter Tony Mullins. He's one of the hitmen of Music Row, as you may know, and he's had a lot of success over the years with songs like All I Want Is a Life for Tim McGraw and How Forever Feels for Kenny Chesney, Me and My Gang, and Backwards for Rascal Flatts, A Little Bit of Life for Craig Morgan, and really so many more songs. Big, big, long list of songs for big artists, so we'd be here all day listening them all. But needless to say, we are thrilled to say, Tony Mullins, welcome back to the Music Row Show. There we go.
All right. Thank you all for having me here.
We're glad you're here. Now,
yeah, man.
Let's go back to Pound Virginia real quick. I know we've talked about a lot of this before last time you were on, but I'm just curious, at what point in your life do you realize, okay, I'm a songwriter and this is what I need to do, and what were your first steps to start moving in that direction?
Well, when I was a little kid, my dad walked in one day with a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
When a little. I mean, I'm talking about, I was like 7, 8, 10 or something like that.
Okay.
And I was just, I mean, that changed my life. It was just, that guitar was just unbelievable. I mean, and I was just, you know, I finally figured out that I could actually do something with it. You know, I could just do, I had good rhythm, I guess.
Okay.
I didn't know anything about chords or anything. I played it with my thumb.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else played, you know, chord stuff. I just thumbed it and did it, you know, messed around over here, made sound, you know.
Yeah. Right. Did you express an interest in it before that, or how did he know to get you that?
Well, my mom's was a singer.
Okay.
You know, she was musically inclined, and my grandpa, he was a banjo player, you know, so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just started messing around with it as a kid and always, you know, loved it.
So was it your dad's guitar, or did he bring it home for you?
No, he bought it for me.
Okay, cool.
It was a little small guitar, you know. Okay. And he carved my name on it with a pocket knife.
Nice.
I still got the guitar.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah, you can't get rid of that.
You know, it's just like a treasure to me. But to make a long story short, I just kept playing, you know, and then I ended up, you know, putting a band together. Because I was so into it, I put this little band together.
At what age?
Oh, man, I was young. I'd say maybe in my teens, early teens.
Uh-huh.
And got some guys together, you know, around the pound there. And we just kind of started playing a little bit. And I won a talent show. I went and entered this talent show they had at the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one guy playing a tambourine. I mean, it was a kind of a joke, you know, but I sat there and jammed a little, you know, sat there and sang and
did
stuff.
Did you play a cover or did you play something?
Yeah, I think it was something like, I think it was a song called All God's Children's Got Shoes. Have you ever remember that song?
No.
It's an old-timey song.
Okay.
And I played that and I won. We won. And we won like $5 a piece or
Whoa.
Something.
That's big
You know,
money.
And it was like, wow, we can do this, you know. But then, you know, I advanced on in. I got into bands and stuff and played, like, cover tunes, you know.
Right.
And so when I got out of high school, I actually got into I bought a music store. This guy had this little string shop in Pound.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, somehow or another it worked out, and I ended up owning that. It was called Musicland USA.
And you're just out of high school?
Yeah, this wasn't far out of high school.
Okay.
And
had you worked
oh,
there?
Oh, no, no, no. Let me take that back. This was on into the years. I worked. I actually got a job with the Corps of Engineers working. I was a gatehouse attendant.
Okay.
At a place called at the Pound Dam. So I had a few jobs, you know.
Right.
And then went into the coal bit. You know, I started doing some coal truck. I drove coal truck.
Mm-hmm.
But all through that time, I was still playing. You know, still, my heart was on music, you know.
Yeah.
And then I bought the store. And when I got the store, it was just like, I mean, I just was back into music.
All day long.
Yeah, and just I sold strings, you know, and
no instruments or anything? It was
guitars. I had, you know, used guitars. I had no kind of big chain or nothing.
Right, right.
No big stuff. Just a small, local, you know, your string capo strap kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, started that, and it did pretty good. It did fairly good. And I always had that thought, man, I need to, you know, I want to do music. That's what I want to do. So I've been doing it since I was a little kid.
I'll be darned.
And then... to advance the story a little further, I actually sold the store because the economy went south. The music, you know, the coal business, it's coal mining business up
right.
there.
Right.
And I had an offer for a good job, and I actually found a guy that wanted to buy the store. So I sold it to him, and I took this big job, which was a mistake because I mean, I was miserable, you know.
Yeah, your heart wasn't.
It wasn't what I was. And I actually had something, a life-changing event that pulled me back the other way. I had a terrible truck accident. I actually wrecked a hauler on the strip job, and it was bad. I mean, I'm lucky to be here.
Right.
But after that, it was that was it. I'm going to go to Nashville and be a songwriter. That was the only thing I could focus and think of. I mean, I just basically said, heck with it.
Sure.
And a song that I've got now that was recorded by Van Sant is a true story. It's called Nobody's Gonna Tell Me What to Do. That's about my dad working. My dad worked in the coal mines for 40 years. He was a head electrician for Bethlehem Steel. And, you know, I dabbled in the coal business and, you know, driving heavy machinery and stuff. But that's on down the road. I you know, wrote that song when I got down here. But so after my truck accident, I loaded up, man. And I had no clue what I was doing. I came to town, and I camped out there at the KOA campground, out there at Opryland. I had no place to live. I had no job, no nothing. I had no clue what the music business was, but I knew I was going to go for it.
That's great.
And I don't think I would have ever made the move if I hadn't had that accident, because I had a little house and I was kind of stable. You know, I was sitting in, you know, I was okay.
Right.
But that made up my mind, and it actually pushed me to make the move.
Would you mind playing a little bit of Nobody's Gonna Tell Me What to Do?
I can tell you that, yes. Now, this is a true story. Like I said, my dad, he worked in Bethlehem Steel his whole life, really. I mean, he worked there for 40-some years, you know. And But it goes like this. See. Should have seen the look on the face of the boss of the second shift when I threw my hard hat at him and suggested the box where he could stick it. I walked downstairs and told him I was leaving Bethlehem like I'd seen the Savior, had tears in my eyes, holding my hand up and shouting amen. 'Cause there ain't nobody gonna tell me what to do. I've spent most of my life wrapped up tight in somebody else's hand-me-down old shoes, and Starting today, I'm someone I'd be proud to know. You can tell me where to go, but there ain't nobody gonna tell me what to do. We buried Daddy just last week at the church and saved his soul. The man that dreamed of pilot's wings, he spent his whole life digging coal. I got a guitar under my bed, but I've been too scared to fly. Well, that's enough of that stuff, I'm packing up my truck. And they could just kiss my butt goodbye. Cause there ain't nobody gonna tell me what to do. I spend most of my life wrapped up tight in somebody else's hand-me-down old shoes. But starting today, I'm someone I'd be proud to know. You might tell me where to go, but there ain't nobody gonna tell me what to do. No, there ain't nobody gonna tell me what to do. I've spent most of my life wrapped up tight in somebody else's hand-me-down old shoes. Starting today, I'm someone I'd be proud to know. You might tell me where to go. You can tell me where to go. But there ain't nobody gonna tell me what to do anymore. Anymore.
Thank you, man.
Nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
Man. Well, you, I've heard you say a number of times, especially when I've seen you play at doing shows, you introduce a lot of your songs as like, here's a stupid song I wrote. And I'm thinking, what? How can you say that about your own song? That's a great song.
Yeah.
Why do you say that? And what's the secret? You know, when you say you write stupid songs, but they're actually really good songs. So what's the secret there?
I just play with the crowd a lot of times.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know. I've found out, I don't know what it is, but, you know, I like to make people laugh for one thing.
Oh, yeah.
I try to get, you know, the crowd having a good time and everything. And I've used all kinds of tricks. I mean, comedy is kind of one of my things, I guess. I've figured out that works, too.
Right.
You know, people love that crazy kind
of
thing. So a lot of times that, you know, I'll say that, you know.
Yeah.
But
well, that makes me feel better.
Some of them are kind of crazy. Yeah. I mean, some of them are kind of.
But that's why they're so brilliant, you know, because, yeah, they are crazy.
Yeah, some of them. Yeah, I've had a couple things. The humor, it's a humor song, I call it, you know. That's done very well.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just part of it, I guess. But.
Well, to that, I've heard editing while you're writing is the worst thing in the world you can do. You just got to let it out. But I tend to edit while I write. No, that idea is stupid, or that's too far out there. But is it better to just let it go and then reel it in down the road? Or
I don't know how other people do. I really don't do that much.
You don't edit?
Not really. I've always felt like, you know, if the first thing, a lot of times the first thing I say or think of is what it really is.
Right.
You know, I don't do a whole lot of rewrite thing.
Really?
I've never really done that. Now, there's certain occasions where I'll go back and rewrite something that just is not right or something. But it seems like to me most of my songs are kind of, you know, I'll write them and that's what it is.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
So Heino was asking then, have there been times when you're writing something you're thinking, this is so goofy that no one would ever really do this, and then it ends up being something
yeah,
that somebody
well,
does?
Excuse me. You know, I really don't know. I mean, a lot of songs that I write, you know, they've got a little sense of a humor to them. Some of them do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And those have been the ones that's been recorded and stuff, some of them.
Okay.
You know, and I don't know if there's a reason for that. Maybe because those are hard to find or something.
Right.
You know, that do have some meat to them. Like you said, they're still got that sense of comedy in it, but they're really good. I mean, they're not, you know, they've still got something to say.
Right.
But, you know, I've got to the point, Scott, where I guess, I've been doing this a long time. And I've got to the point now that if I get on something and I don't think it's any good, I start over on something else.
Just walk away.
I don't waste a whole lot of time mm-hmm. on stuff that I don't feel good about. There was a time where I'd work on a song and it just never did happen.
Really?
You know, it'd be like, well, spend all this time on a song when you knew 3 hours ago it wasn't worth working on or something. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There comes to a point to where you wrote so many songs, I think I figured out that once I can tell if it's going to be something or not, you know, something that's worth finishing, or there's songs I've started and I'm like, man, this is just not it, you mm-hmm. know, and move on to something else. I've done that.
We need to take a break, but we're going to come back and talk more about this because I think we both have more questions.
Absolutely.
About that. So yeah. We're here with the great Tony Mullins.
And we should also mention that our sponsor this segment is our friends over at Toyota of Cool Springs.
We should. We love those guys. They're, you know, not only to go look at buying a car there, but servicing your car there. No matter what you're doing there, they're committed to making sure that they're giving you an excellent experience and using their experience to give you an excellent deal.
That's
so
true.
They're fantastic, whether it's sales or service, and
go ask for George when you go there because he's a great guy and he'll take great care of you. Tell him the Music Row Show sent you, and you can find him online at toyotaofcoolsprings.com. We're here down at the Mississippi Songwriters Festival. We've got the great Tony Mullins here with us, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Been gearing up all day for a hot Friday night.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here down at the Mississippi Songwriters Festival, and we're hanging out with the great Tony Mullins right now.
Yeah. Before the break, right. We were talking about how sometimes, you know, you used to work for hours on a song.
Right.
Whereas now, if you feel like it's not there, you just put it down and go to the next one. But was that mostly when you were co-writing or even solo writing? Would you work on something forever and ever? I think co-writing, sometimes it's harder to tell the person next to you, hey, this isn't working.
Yes, that's right. It is. Yeah, co-writing.
Especially if it's their idea.
Yeah, you know, you work on something and you're trying your best to get it, you know.
Right.
And it is hard if the other, you know, if your writer is into it and stuff.
Yeah.
You kind of go, well, I'm not sure, you know. I mean, there's ways to do it, but yes, it would be, I don't know. It's just, I guess, you know, when you do something so long, there's my phone going off.
All right. Nice. I wonder who it is.
What do you think about that?
We get great cell phone reception down here at the...
In Mississippi.
Telephone calls are going to have to go on hold, folks.
That's what happens when you're Tony Mullins. You're a very popular person. Everybody wants you.
Goodbye. Anyway, so, you know, I just, have you ever done that to where you got on something and you're just like, you know what, this is just not going to work. And you just feel like you just need to just start on something else.
Yes.
I mean, I used to not be that way. I mean, you know, I used to, heck, when I first came to town, I wrote 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. I'd have a 10, a 2, and a, you know, and then a 6 or something. I was a writing machine. I mean, I had like 3 writers a day.
Did you forget them after a while?
Oh, yeah.
You'd hear somebody play a song, you're like, I kind of like that. It's familiar. I wonder why. You wrote it with me.
Oh, my God. I mean, to tell you, Dale, I've worked hard. I've got about 1,000, right around 1,000 songs.
Wow.
In my catalog. That's a lot of work.
That is a lot of work.
You know, and I'd say 90% of them are full-blown demos.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. I have that many songs. Yes, wow. And that's over a 20-year career. But, oh, man, I was eat up with it back then.
Are you still co-writing as much as you used to?
I really am not co-writing like I used to, no.
Okay.
No, I do it. I co-write at a slower pace and try to get a better quality of song.
Gotcha.
Back then, it was just write them and boom.
See what sticks. Yeah.
Yeah, it was safety in numbers kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was working for a publisher, they wanted that quota, and it was just like write them. I mean, I was able to do that, but some of those songs are just, I mean, you know, they're okay, but they're not that quality of song that you need nowadays to be recorded.
So how many at your apex with the publishing companies, how much output were you given in a year? How many songs?
Oh, man, I would write, I'd write 75 songs easy.
Wow.
And that's how many they expected from you?
No, I had a lower, I was way over my quota.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I may have had it seemed like a 12-song or 15 something,
song
yeah,
quota.
In there. And, I'd blow that over in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know. But that's just what was me, man. I was consumed with it so much that I would write. The quota was not even in existence.
Right. Yeah.
So I would probably write 75 to 100 songs a year. I'd say at my peak time, I did that. I would do a 75 to 100, and I would do demos constantly. I'd go in and cut 5 and 6 songs at a time. That is rare now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, most people don't go in and cut demos like that. They'll do single songs or this was back when it was booming.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, and we'd go in and we'd want to get 6 songs on a session so it wouldn't cost so much.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I'd do a session about every 2 weeks.
Wow. Now, were publishers happy you were producing that many songs?
Yeah, they
were. Or were they like, whoa, dude, slow down, we can't keep up?
No, they wanted them.
All right.
You know, they want it bad because that's just padding their situation, you know.
Right.
The more songs they got and the more things they got to throw out, you know.
Yeah.
But, they wanted those songs, and that's okay. I mean, I still got the songs.
Yeah.
You know, I actually own my own catalog now.
Nice. Oh, that's good.
So I was fortunate enough to recoup my catalog, and that put me back in control of my songs. Well, I still have the songs. They're mine.
So you're really happy that you have all those songs.
I got all those songs. And some of them, I'm telling you right now, they're diamonds waiting. I mean, I've got some killers.
Yeah.
You know, that are older. But, I mean, I have got some good. I think, some of my best songs have never been recorded.
Nice.
I guess we're all thinking, you know, some of us all think that.
I know that's the case for me. And I would say Scott as well.
Right.
Just because nobody's recorded
exactly.
Our stuff. So we can say that with much confidence.
We know.
Confidence.
I'm telling you, the best songs never see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's the way I feel about my catalog. I have actually 3 catalogs.
Really?
Yeah, I have 3 different catalogs through the years.
Okay. How are they separated?
Well, I have the first place I started writing was Pride Music Group.
Mm-hmm.
With Byron Gallimore,
mm-hmm.
was my first guy. He signed me. So I had Pride Music Group. Then it was bought by Warner Chappell.
Mm-hmm.
I have that. And then I left Warner Chappell and went to Almo Irving.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was bought by Universal.
Right.
So I have all of that. That's 25 years of songs, you know, that's in those catalogs. And
now, was that because you were brilliant in how you signed your original deals, or you just managed to make enough money you could buy them all back?
Well, once the way it works is if you take a draw, you know, off of that catalog,
mm-hmm.
if you make enough money to recoup your draw,
yeah.
My contracts was set up to where I get the songs back.
Okay, so you were smart about it at the beginning signed your deals.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's set up so where I was fortunate enough to have some songs recorded that generated money.
Mm-hmm.
And they paid my draw and my demos and everything back to zero, which is called recoupment.
Right.
So now I don't owe them anything. I'm zeroed out, and everything that the songs make, I get it as a royalty. So I'm recouped, and then the way my contract was, once it gets to zero, I get my songs back.
That's fantastic.
Wow.
So that was pretty
cool. Is that
cool,
pretty
you know?
Typical or pretty unusual?
I don't know that it's typical nowadays.
Yeah.
But
I can't imagine nowadays because everybody's trying to
get squeeze that last penny.
Nowadays, it's not like that, I don't think.
No,
I don't know. I've not really searched for a publishing deal. Now I have my own publishing.
Right.
Once I actually left Universal and I started my own little
T. Mullins Music.
And it's mine. You know, I do the whole thing.
So what's that like for you then, now being on the other side? I mean, do you pitch songs to yourself and then turn yourself down and then sometimes take them? Or?
You know what? You know, it's hard. It's hard. I found out that it's hard to be the publisher and the writer.
What makes it hard?
Well, you got to pitch your songs.
Right.
You have nothing to bounce it off of anybody.
Right.
You know, like I can't come to you and go, hey, man, what do you think about this? You know,
because it's just you. Like,
yeah. I mean, I do that to my family and stuff, but you don't have a business person sitting there.
Right.
I have to plug my own stuff.
And that's that's hard?
It's hard. It's
how's
hard.
That process been
It's
for
hard
you?
Because you got to be in the click of knowing who's cutting, mm-hmm. when they're cutting, you know, talking to people. All of that is hard, and then continue to write songs.
Right.
It's like two full-time jobs.
It's like running two things, yeah.
Yeah.
So really, at this point in my career, I feel like it's harder to do it that way because I feel like I would rather just concentrate on writing the songs.
Right.
You know, back when I was with a publisher, I didn't care about that. I concentrated on writing the best songs I could. Now I've got this other stuff. You know, it's harder. But the payoff is,
it's all yours.
If you get something recorded and it's a big hit, you get all the money.
Right.
You get all the reward. You know, you get the publishing. You get the copyright. You get to control everything. So there is a plus and a minus. Some people do it great.
Yeah.
You know, I've got friends that have done the publishing on their own, and they love it. I mean, they're really good with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't affect them.
I would imagine part of the hard part also is one of the things that a publisher does is look for places to place the song, whether it's movies or commercials or overseas, and you know, just being able to scope out all that stuff.
That's true.
And without a team, how do you do all of the things you just talked about and still do that too?
It's tough unless you want to go into it and actually have employees
and start hiring people.
Yeah, start hiring those people. I haven't done that yet. You know, to where you actually take on a plugger and an admin. You know, I've basically just kind of floated on my own. And I've had a couple singles out there on my own.
Good.
I had the Phil Vassar thing,
mm-hmm.
Let's Get Together.
Mm-hmm.
That's out of my little publishing company, and I control that whole thing.
Cool.
And then I had this new one that just came out on Ray Scott called Drinking Beer.
Oh, yeah. It's a great song,
Drinking Beer.
That was mine. That's out of my publishing company.
By the way, Ray just got married last weekend. And we want to say congratulations to him. And
our condolences to her.
Our condolences to Stacey. As songwriters, we always pray for beautiful women with poor judgment. And Ray got a good in there.
Yeah, he sure did.
Ray's something else.
Well, you mentioned earlier you put a lot of humor in a lot of your songs. Yeah. And I know a lot of writers try really hard to, you know, come up with deep, you know, meaningful,
right,
world-changing songs. And, you know, but writing a fun song is a lot harder than it seems. I mean, especially to have it be a good one.
You're right. I think you're right.
What are some of the secrets or tips to getting a good one of that type
of
song?
Well, I've always been kind of crazy, so I guess.
Well, that helps. Okay, step one, be crazy. Got it. Okay, check.
I really don't know. I've always just been funny.
Okay.
I feel like, you know, I'm good at dumb, funny lines.
Yeah.
Or crazy, not dumb. But
yeah.
I don't know.
But in general, just for an up-tempo song and a feel-good type song,
it's hard.
It's hard to come up with something that isn't, you know, because it's really easy to be stupid.
Right.
You know,
exactly. I agree with that. I think that's probably something that's hard to do because you don't really see a whole lot of those, really. You know, not a whole lot. I mean, you have some, but not a whole lot of those.
Right. Okay.
Well, we got a couple more minutes here for this segment. One of my all-time favorite Chesney songs is How Forever Feels.
Okay, wow.
And I want to just talk about writing that song. Was there a temptation? This is the other thing about songwriting, not just how to do it and how you get started, but how do you know when to stop a song? I mean, was there a temptation to keep writing verses?
You're
how Troy Aikman feels,
this.
How George Clooney
you're
feels.
You're not going to believe when I'm telling you this. We had... I think we had six verses.
No kidding.
We had six verses, and that is, we did the exact same thing. We had an Elvis version.
Uh-huh.
The Elvis
How
verse.
How Elvis Presley feels.
We had a Michael Jordan.
I had put that down, Michael Jordan.
Verse. Uh-huh. We had a Tarzan verse. And I think it was like a Superman and another artist. I think it was like a rock thing, like Alice
Jim
Cooper
Neighbors?
Or something.
No. No kidding.
Yeah, we had six or seven verses. And we took it to the publisher.
Uh-huh.
And they said, y'all can't do that, man. That thing's like, you know, 5-6 minutes long. They said, you need to get that. And so we realized we couldn't do it.
Right.
Sure.
You know, and then we, I think it was Byron that I bounced it off of.
Uh-huh.
And he also was not in to me saying never saying the title. He was like, man, you can't do that. You can't never say the title like that.
Right.
See, the title's never said till the last verse.
Right, that's right.
Right.
They wasn't into that at all. They were like, you cannot do that. That will never work. That you can't wait till the end of the song to say the title. That's an odd thing.
Okay, so as a songwriter, when do you know to stick to your guns rather than saying, okay, well then we'll...
I tell you right now, I must admit that I've always stuck to my guns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not bragging or anything, but I've never really, I've done what I wanted to do. It's kind of like my
Ain't
nobody,
nobody
going to
tell you what to do.
And I've really stuck to my guns.
On the other hand, that song doesn't have 8 verses, so.
Nope. We narrowed it down to 3 verses. The one verse we had to keep because Wendell Mobley, who I wrote it with,
mm-hmm.
I had an office on Music Row. He came in. And the way the song started was, he came in and said, I'm buying me a race car. And I'm like, man, you're crazy. You know, it's too much. He was broke. Wendell was flat broke back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you can't do that. You ain't got the money to run no kind of race and team and all this. He said, I don't care. I want to know how Richard Petty feels.
Dang.
And, dude, it was on like Donkey Kong after that.
Well, just a quick question. How do you know then, especially if you're writing a song like that and you're making references to, you know, people and things that are topical now, what kind of thought did you have in your mind of, okay, 10 years from now, is anybody going to know?
We didn't have that.
Okay.
I know my first verse was talking about the water and the beach and stuff, so
right.
We thought Jimmy Buffett would fit that.
Sure.
The next one was talking about your car getting out of control. That was the Richard Petty thing that Wendell had.
But those are both icons.
Right.
Iconic.
So we lucked up on picking the right ones.
Yeah, you could have said
pick a famous racer, you know, that maybe
exactly.
5 years from now nobody's
so
heard
we
of.
Did, right. I'm telling you, we had that was not even in our mind at that time.
I'll be darned.
And then the How Forever Feels just was the love thing.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it ended up being 3 verses with the title at the very end of the song,
brilliant.
Which was breaking all the rules.
Well, listen, we need to take a break. We're going to come back and get another song from you. We're here with Tony Mullins. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We are here at the Mississippi Songwriters Festival in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here at the Mississippi Songwriters Festival, and we are hanging out with Tony Mullins. No?
The great sisters are here. God. It's the great.
The great and not altogether uncrazy Tony
go.
Mullins.
Right.
There we go.
Oh,
right,
man.
Right.
Well, can we get one more song out of you?
Yeah.
All right.
Would you want me to play any certain song?
Whatever.
You
know, I don't know if you're comfortable doing this.
Something you haven't played before for us. Yeah.
How about like you were saying you got these diamonds that haven't been
yes.
cut yet? Can
Give
you
us
play
a
one
diamond.
Of those
oh
or you don't feel
God,
like sharing
you put
those
me
yet?
On the spot now.
Well, what would your publisher say? Come on.
Golly.
He is his publisher.
I know.
That's the thing, ain't it? How about okay, listen up, everybody. There's something I'd like to talk to you about. Something I truly enjoy. Drink a beer.
Yeah.
Out on the lake. In a big old boat. kicking up away. Yeah, it's a good day to be anywhere. Drinking beer. Raise your cups and your glass and your bottle up high. Raise your cups and your glass and your bottle up high. Drink a beer out on the lake in a big old boat kicking up away. Yeah, it's a good day to be anywhere. Drinking beer, drinking beer at the go-kart race. Yeah, there ain't nothing but a silly grin on my face. Like seeing all that smoke just flying in the air. I drink a beer. Raise your cups and your glass and your bottle up high. Yeah, raise your glass and your bottle and your cups up high. Drink a beer. Out plowing corn. Got me some cold PBR stashed in the barn. Yeah, love leaning up against my old John Deere. A drinking beer. Yeah, raise your bottles and your glasses and your cups up high. Yeah, raise your bottles and your cups and your glasses up high. You know, when we get older, we seem to change in a lot of ways. You know, one of these days I might give up my honky-tonkin' ways. But I'm pretty sure, as I'm sitting right here today with Scott and Hino, I know one thing I'll be doing. Drinking beer out on the porch in a rocking chair with a dog laying on the floor. And every now and then my beautiful lady Kimberly will come out there drinking beer. Yeah, raise your bottles and your cups and your glasses up high. Yeah, raise your bottles and your cups and your glasses up high. Yeah, when I leave this world, I hope they all up there drinking beer, drinking beer.
Woo! Wow. Only Tony Mullins can put 8 syllables in the word beer. That's all. So then, you know, you mentioned you've been doing this for a long time, 20 plus years. Where do you now go to mining for new ideas? Because you probably have already thought of everything any one of us could think of. So where do you go for new ideas?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, you better be careful. I might put you in a song.
Nice.
No, man. I just get ideas here and there. I mean, I guess I'm programmed in a
you're
way.
Just,
you know?
You're just always looking.
Yeah. I mean, there's times when I've just got an idea that was just like right there, and I'm like, well, there's an idea.
Boom.
You know, you're all like that too, I'm sure.
Sure, yeah.
You know, if you're a songwriter and you're looking for that jewel of an idea, you know, you never know, man, when right. you're going to get that.
Do you throw them down on your phone real quick, or how do you remember them?
I've got tons of them on my phone.
Yeah.
I mean, I have woke up in the middle. No kidding, you've heard people say they woke up in the middle of the night and wrote stuff down.
Sure.
I have done that.
Could you read it the next day?
Well, a lot of times. And you know what? I've this is wild. I've kind of wrote a song in my dream.
Yeah.
And get up the next morning and it's terrible.
Yeah.
You think it's a big old hit, you know, while you're sleeping or something, and you get up and it's not good.
I did that once. I woke up and I in the dark, I wrote it down, and the next morning I was so excited to look, and it said like purple ostrich on my face, tax collectors, and I'm like, what on earth was I thinking?
That is absolutely the truth.
Yeah.
But, I've got stuff on my phone. You know, I'll get an idea, and I'll go get my phone. You know, I've got that little recorder thing on there now.
Sure.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Because that thing, I mean, instantly, and then I'll do this little thing, you know. But I have actually went back and got some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those spur-of-the-moment kind of sayings or phrases or hooks, they call them. You know, so that does happen, yeah. That happens.
I think the key is to remember to go back and look, because I've got a ton of them, and I forget that I've done it.
Right.
You know,
go back and go,
and
wait
I go back
a minute
and like,
here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot
I've
about
done
that,
that
one.
We all do that same thing, I'm sure.
Man.
So what motivates and excites you now musically? What gets you excited these days?
You know, I guess it's just playing. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of fun now like this right here.
At the festival.
This, yeah, the festival. Going out and playing, you know, mm-hmm. and just being with this Mississippi Songwriters Festival, man, this is a blast.
Yeah.
You know, I like going out and doing the crowd. I like playing, making people laugh and, you know, have a good time and stuff.
Well,
I'm
plus you have this entourage we've seen you with at the last couple festivals.
I got me
with
an entourage.
You sure
did
do.
You tell your sisters what I said?
No.
I told him, I said, you know, when I met you, I thought, you have to be the life of the party in your family. And then I met your sisters. And
yeah.
I realized that, no,
yeah.
no, they're the life of the
yeah,
party.
Yeah, Tony's the boring one.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to get my sisters to come down with me here, me and
yeah.
my sisters and my beautiful wife.
You got to give them a name, like Tony Mullins and the,
oh yeah,
you know.
And the Purdians.
The Purdians.
I like
okay.
it.
T. Mullins and the Purdians.
I love it.
okay.
I
but,
love it.
But it worked out. They were going to come and visit me in Nashville.
Uh-huh.
And we had planned that, you know, a couple months ago. Well, once I found out that I was invited to do this,
right.
I said, man, that would be killer if y'all could just go down there with me, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have had an absolute blast. It has been a trip to remember, I can tell you. What do y'all think?
There we go. All right, listen, we need to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with one more segment with the great Tony Mullins.
Much better.
Here on the Music Row Show. Come on back.
Hamburger patties on the grill. Cold beer in the cooler. The pool table's in the way. Somebody better move her.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show from the Mississippi Songwriters Festival, the fifth annual Mississippi Songwriters Festival.
Man.
We're in Ocean Springs. This hotel is so cool. The Gulf Resort, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Gulf Hills.
The Gulf Hills Resort. Thank you.
Gulf Hills Resort.
This place was built by Al Capone. Elvis used to stay here. This is just...
It's
just
amazing
cool,
history. Yeah.
It
coolness
really
in the walls here. Now,
and soon, they'll you know, years from now, they'll be saying, and the great Tony Mullins.
And the great Tony Mullins, who is here with us. And one thing we haven't touched on is, you know, you used to have that very, very fun TV show, The Hitmen of Music Row.
Yes, yes.
Which was one of the first reality shows out there. And it was just you and Craig and
Jeff Steele.
Jeffrey Steele
and
Bob DePiro.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just running around being crazy and writing songs. is there talks of a reunion? Are you still writing with these guys? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm getting ready to write with Jeff.
Okay.
In a little bit. Yeah, we got a day down.
Oh, good.
And, you know, we're kind of scattered. Everything's scattered and everything. But,
right.
But, yeah, we still hang in there, and every now and then we'll get called for, like, the corporate gig, you know.
Okay.
So they'll call us, and we'll do a show, and
what's that like to be performing? Are these people like all sitting there in suits and ties? No,
we've done a lot for insurance companies,
okay.
you know, medical companies and uh-huh. stuff. And they just put together a little party for their, you know, it's called a corporate gig, is what we call it.
Yeah.
That it's all paid for. And it's they pay good.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
because it's all kind of a tax write off thing.
Sure.
And our TV show, which was a songwriter reality show.
Right.
Gets us those gigs because they say, oh man, these guys got a TV show.
Right.
You know, and they see, you know, we got all the promo stuff and we got a little video we play and stuff. So it's worked out great in that aspect. But man, that was the most fun I believe I've ever had in the music business.
Really?
We had a blast. It was us four. We just run around. We book shows in different spots, like we went to Niagara Falls, we went to Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
we went to Atlanta, Palm Springs, Florida.
Right.
You know, and we just, they followed us around. The TV crew followed us around, and we was just ourselves. I mean, we're crazy anyway.
Yeah.
And we've been buddies and friends and riders together so long.
So you're playing off each
it
other.
It was just us having a great time.
So you didn't have a bunch of riders following you around.
There was
like,
no
hey, now I need you to fight with Craig now. I need you to be, you know.
Well, no.
We
no,
need an
no,
argument.
It was totally unscripted.
Good.
Nothing was ever said, you do this or you do that.
Yeah.
We just went and we'd go eat or we'd go, you know, to a magic shop or we'd plan places to go. And then whatever spontaneously happened at that place.
Right.
I mean, we went to a haunted house in Atlanta, you know, that kind of thing. We went to New York City and went to John Lennon's, you know, where John Lennon's place is
right
there and stuff. And they just followed us, man. And we took all these limos and all, you know, we had a good budget. We had a really good budget to do the show. And it ended up being something really wild. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Oh, yeah. We saw it.
Yeah. We used to watch it.
We were actually a little annoyed with you because you made songwriting look so fun. We were thinking, oh, great, now everybody's going to move here,
you know,
wanting to be
I
a songwriter.
You know? That's probably true.
You know?
And then we'd go to these shows, and, man, we'd just blow out
just
the shows.
Kill it. Yeah.
I mean, it was packed, you know.
Yeah.
And those, not me, but those guys have got so many hits.
Right.
It was just hit after hit. I mean, it was like we
oh, you and, got plenty
well,
too.
Well, I got
you
a few.
Yeah,
I'm just saying our saying was like we had more hits than George Strait.
Right.
We had like 51 number ones or something between the four of us or something. You know, it was just like and people would go, "What?" And they would not grasp a hold of us because we don't look like, you know, I mean, we're like a bunch of regular guys, you know, and they could not grasp a hold of the thought that we wrote those songs.
Right.
No.
You mean they didn't believe you?
They did not. I don't think they ever got it. There was one guy came up to me one night after we'd done a show, and he went, "You know, you boys are pretty good, but you need to play your own songs." That is the honest truth that happened.
And I didn't like, come here to pay. I didn't pay all this money to watch you play
songs.
He's
covers. Like, "Y'all good, man. But you need to play your own songs."
Well, we had another
serious
writer.
Serious about it.
Who was it? We had Sam Tate on the show, and he was saying that he played a Bluebird round with three other writers, and it was like hit after hit. The whole night was hit after hit
right,
after hit.
Right.
And afterwards, he's going to the bathroom, and he overhears a guy who was at the show grumbling to his friend. He's like, "I can't believe I paid $20 to come in here and watch a bunch of old guys sing cover songs." You know, he just didn't get it that, you know, no, these guys wrote all these songs.
They don't get it. Yeah. I really don't think, even at some places like this, some of them don't get it.
Right.
You know, they see you play something, they're like, well, they don't really realize that, you know, normal people like me and you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we write the songs, and then the artist goes out there and makes a big hit out of it.
Right.
I'd say 90% of the public still don't realize that, really.
Yeah, they don't.
You know, some of them do, but we had a blast with the Hitman show. And they say now that it is really big down in Australia.
No kidding.
Oh, I can see that.
There's a GAC Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually came to my house and filmed a segment for the Australian market called Rolling with the Hitmen.
Okay.
And it plays down there. They came to my house and they all talked like all this.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't understand what
they. Let's hear it. Let's do your Australian accent. Come on.
But, you know, I'm country, and the guy kept looking at me a lot like,
"You're looking at him, and he's looking at you.
What is this guy saying?" You know, he's like.
You both look like like how dog looks when it's confused. Like, tilting the head.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
What?
But they say, I've heard, that we're big down there, man.
Well, then,
because
is Kimberly.
Like
plan the trip to Australia?
No,
what?
She needs to.
There
Come
you
on.
Go.
One guy said, "Y'all like a Rocky Horror Picture Show. They get together and work, act out all your stuff." And I'm like, "You got to be kidding me, man."
Oh, my gosh.
But they're, you know, I guess down there, they're like, "What in the world is this?" You know?
Yeah.
They love country music. Australia people, they do.
They do. They love it.
They love it. But when they see us, it just takes it to a whole new level, I guess.
I think it's time for an Australian tour, Tony.
Yeah,
oh,
maybe.
Yeah. Well, you had a song on that show. There was one song that you guys did. You had a segment of you guys demoing it, and I think it was called Money.
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 Mo Money.
Mo Money.
Money.
I loved that song so
Mo
much.
Money.
I actually made a little recording of it to put on my iTunes, you know, off of the TV, because I liked the little snippet that was on
Mo
there.
Mo Money.
Yeah.
There was a part in Mo Money I'll never forget. I got this real deep voice that I use, mm-hmm. And they, I started doing that. Well, they begged me to put it on it. More money.
Yeah.
More money. More money. And they put that on the recording. And it, yeah. Like a major part of the song.
Yeah.
It was just so.
That's a great song. I love it. It's so hooky. It's something about Lamborghini.
Oh, it's good, man. All right. We wrote that as the Hitmen. See, we wrote a bunch of songs as the Hitmen.
Right.
With cameras in the room?
Yeah, we wrote them with cameras in the room. So we had we actually went into the studio and recorded these songs.
Okay.
There's like four or five, I think. One of them's called I Want to Be a Hitman.
I remember that one.
That, and then I can't remember the rest of them, but we wrote those songs as the Hitman. One of them's called Hippies and Rednecks.
Yeah, I remember
you
that
remember
one.
That?
Yeah.
And it was like amazing. We went in, I played bass, Craig played drums. Jeff and Bob plays guitar.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually in a session.
Yeah. So y'all just hit it.
And we recorded our own thing and went in there, and Jeff sang most of the lead,
mm-hmm.
you know, because he's a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and Bob and Craig put the harmonies on there, and we actually turned it into like a record kind of thing.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
Man, it was fun.
Well,
thank
you know
so
what else
much.
Has been fun? Spending time with you this hour.
Yeah.
Thank you so
oh,
much.
Man, I've had a blast.
Had a great time.
Thank you
so
much.
Again. So people want to find out more about you, maybe buy some of your music. Where can they do that?
Well, you know, I've got a little web page, but I've not updated it in a while.
Okay.
All
right. Just find you on Facebook. And go to your shows.
I do the Facebook thing.
Okay. All right.
Tony Mullins on Facebook.
Sweet.
My web page is TonyMullinsSongs.com.
Okay.
But the Facebook's probably the
okay.
Most, all right, yeah. Sounds good. Well, listen, we've been coming to you from the Mississippi Songwriters Festival. We've had a great time. Go check out themusicrowshow.com,
yeah.
And we'll see you all next week on the Music Row Show.
Thank you guys for having
me.
Yeah, man. Woo-hoo. All right, man.
Woo! Strong heart.